And hello, everybody. Welcome to another Way of the Truth Warrior live stream. My name is David Whitehead. Very happy to be here with you once again. And I got to say, I am extremely excited about today's episode. We have with us somebody that is a hero of mine. I've been following his career and his martial arts for many years now. He's a huge inspiration to not only myself, but many people in the martial art community and the jiu-jitsu community. And he's a very, very unique individual, I can tell you that. And we get to spend a whole hour with him today. He, of course, is none other than the great Professor Ricardo Almeida. He's a fourth degree black belt under Henzo Gracie. He is a former champion, mixed martial arts fighter, UFC fighter. He's trained the likes of Eddie Alvarez, lightweight champion, Frankie Edgar, former lightweight champion. And speaking of Frankie Edgar, holy cow, what an amazing performance. So congratulations to you, Professor, on that amazing win. And welcome to the show, man. It's a great privilege to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me, David. It's awesome. You know, the guys do awesome, man. You know, like between Frankie and Eddie and all the students that we have at the school, from the little kids, you know, I'm lucky. I have the best students, you know.
Well, that's amazing. And I mean, you have the best students because you've been able to share the wisdom and knowledge that you've gained over the years of your training. I'd love to get a little bit into your background, but did you have any sort of comments on how that fight went with Frankie Edgar? It was a recent fight. He's had an incredible career. What was it like being there? What was the buzz like in the arena? What's that feeling like when you're coaching one of the people that you've raised up and helped get to this level and you see them do so well?
Man, you know, it was, you know, and I told Frankie at the, you know, a couple of days later, it was by far one of my coolest coaching experiences, just being there and being able to walk out with Frankie in New Jersey. You know, it's been 10 years since he fought here in Jersey, and he did fight at the Garden, but it's not the same. Mm-hmm. And just the energy in the crowd was unlike anything I've ever seen from all the places that I've been to. You know, I did go to Brazil and a couple of places that were really intense, but I was never like with like a hometown guy. So as far as like hometown, it was definitely the most incredible experience. As we are about to walk out, like a fight breaks out in the crowd, and you know, Cubs walking out and he's getting booed. And I'm like, all right, I know we're in Jersey.
Oh my God!
But I haven't seen this happen anywhere else. And then Frankie walks out, and the crowd went nuts. You know, it was really cool. I wanted to, for a second, I wanted to almost just grab my phone off my pocket and just make like a video, you know, but didn't want to seem like I was a groupie on TV. You know what I mean? But it was definitely something that, you know, I'll definitely cherish that moment for sure. You know, not only for me, but just for Frankie to get that sort of like recognition in Jersey, in AC, where a lot of our local fighters start their fighting careers, was pretty incredible. As far as the fight itself, I think Frankie fought the perfect fight. You know, coming back from a devastating loss, the first time that he got stopped, really, and to be able to go out there and not lose 1 minute of any of the rounds, you know, and just really like put on like a perfect performance. Cub played very safe. I think Frankie, I was talking to Frankie this morning, actually, after they did their rolling, and he was like, you know, he's still a little bit bummed that he didn't get to, you know, take him down and finish. He was definitely looking for the finish. But, you know, Cub, I thought, played a safe fight, and I think Frankie just kind of kept bringing it, and unless Cub engaged him, I think Cub felt that if he engaged Frankie, that it was going to be worse for him. You know?
Oh yeah. Well, it was an amazing display of martial arts. And what I like about, I've always been a huge fan of Frankie Edgar as well. What I like about Frankie is that he's a legit championship person. Like he's a champion of life. He's got an amazing character. He's never been into the trash talk or the drama. He's just gone out there and done his business. And it seems like the guys that come from your academy and that you work with, and I had the opportunity to interview one of your black belts recently, Chris Matakas. So shout out to Chris if you're watching, man. A great show. And it just seems like you've surrounded yourself with some amazing people. And there's this stigma. There's people that'll be tuning into this show that maybe don't follow fighting. They don't watch mixed martial arts, or they're not really aware of jiu-jitsu and martial arts in general. And they might look at it as like, oh, it's something that's violent, and it's not something that we want to encourage and all of this. There's sort of this stigma, especially with mixed martial arts. You've been a mixed martial arts fighter and a jiu-jitsu, like world-class jiu-jitsu champion and coach. What would you say is sort of behind that mixed martial arts and being a martial artist that you could say to people that might think, oh, it's just something that's a violent spectacle? How would you, from a fighter's perspective, how would you comment on that?
I think as far as like a sport or a combat sport and definitely like a spectator sport, I'll just give you like the most basic example. You know, if we were in a high school and they were having a basketball game and they were having a soccer game and they were having a football game and they were having all the games at the same time at all the courts, as soon as the fight broke out, everyone would leave those to watch the fight. You know, and as far as like mixed martial arts, these are the best fighters in the world. Like as far as athleticism, these guys are probably some of the most athletic athletes, some of the strongest pound per pound athletes, some of the most flexible and fastest pound per pound athletes. You know, so I think when you take a fighter's body and a fighter's mind, and even like the spirit, you know, like it's really like the peak or like the most that you could ask from an athlete in all the other sports combined in one. You know, you need endurance, you need mental toughness, you need perseverance, you need patience, you need precision, you need power, you need flexibility, you know, you need all these different sorts of types of attributes that the mixed martial artists, you know, once you see, you know, the top five, the top 10 of every division in the UFC, some of these guys are just incredible athletes, even the ladies, you know. You take, you know, the speed of an American football player and the quickness of the quick feet of a basketball player, you know, and the hand-eye coordination of a baseball player, and then just the toughness of the hockey player, you know, trying to use American sports, like all those things combined in one athlete that's not trying to beat someone's time, that's not to trying to get a ball to a hoop, that's not trying to put a ball under, you know, in between a rectangle with the crossbars. You know, you're trying to defeat another human being that is just as fast, just as strong, just as mentally tough as you are in a playing field that there is no out of bounds and there's minimum referee interference. So as far as a sport, I think it's like the peak of human performance is not to perform against time, it's to perform against another human.
And it's done so it's obviously you're having a fight with somebody, but for some of the top champions, you know, I've spoken to guys like George St. Pierre and Mark Bocek and many other Canadian fighters, you know, I've done competition in the past myself. I've trained martial arts my whole life. And I found that it's something that gives you all the ingredients that you need for life. So even though it's a sport, martial arts historically is a tradition of empowerment. It's a tradition of courage. It's a tradition of honor. It's a tradition of, like you said, all of those attributes that I think every human being needs: the mental toughness, the fortitude, the discipline, the self-confidence, all of these incredible things. I feel like it all comes together in the martial artist, and it becomes a way of expression. So you're not there with just the intent to, like, you know, kill or maim somebody in the ring. The true champions are there to compete at their best, to bring out the best in them. And you need an equal oppositional force. You need somebody to push you. You need someone to grind you in order to bring the best out of you. Would you look at it like that?
Yeah, you know, and I think what people fail to forget as far as mixed martial arts, even to start, you know, besides all the great things that he does, is like it's a very heavily regulated sport by the athletic commissions as far as licensing, as far as medical exams they do before and after fights. You know, of course, it's a combat sport, so, you know, you do get hit, you do get cut, you do get hurt, but not any more than any other sport. And, you know, you have USADA, you know, which is the drug testing that's, you know, it's Olympic level drug testing. These guys, my guy, you know, almost every week I have an USADA person walking into my school to get these guys in training, you know. They have to update on where they're going to be every day. Sometimes USADA goes to their house 6 o'clock in the morning. Sometimes they come to my gym and, you know, they stop them in the middle of practice and they have to do not only, you have to give not only urine sample, but blood samples. And even jiu-jitsu is not like that. You know, in jiu-jitsu, for the most part, it's just a bunch of guys, a bunch of juice heads. They're jacked and they're really good, but I don't think those guys can compete professionally with the level of drug testing that the UFC has. You know, So I think that's what people fail to. It's not a insane spectacle where people do whatever they want to get ready for it. You know, there are regulations. So I think that's one. But I think as far as the martial arts practice period, you know, I think sports in general, you learn so much from going up against something and dreaming and wanting to win, and then you come up short and you lose and you do a better job next time. And to be able to feel the elation that you do in victory, you have to also be open to the sadness and just the distraught of defeat. And that's, as a practitioner, as well as a fan, you know, of many, how many fans get so upset with the Super Bowl results or for us Brazilians, the World Cup. And just the practice of martial arts, you experience that every day, because every day you're going hand-to-hand combat against another person in a very controlled and very safe environment, especially in jiu-jitsu. You know, we don't do sparring. I haven't done a round of sparring. I haven't gotten hit in the head since 2011, when I had my last UFC fight. Like, I don't spar at all, but I do roll every day, many days, twice a day, and it's perfectly safe. I haven't had any injuries or any major injuries since. You always get, you know, a little bump and a bruise here and there, but and this is at any level. You know, I'm like a retired pro fighter, but you know, for the little kids, I think martial arts goes above and beyond, you know, school sports, where like the discipline and the focus and the respect and a lot of the rituals that we have in a martial arts mats, you know, like in a dojo, they transcend into other areas of the kids' lives. You know, like if a child is able to respect, you know, a jiu-jitsu professor with all these rituals, then all of a sudden they're respecting more their soccer coach. All of a sudden they're respecting more their teacher at school. All of a sudden, you know, they have more respect for their parents and their siblings, you know. And I think it just goes that way. No kid's perfect. My kids fight all the time. But
mine too.
When my daughter started playing soccer, she did real well. You know, she's never going to be a pro player or anything like that. But I felt like she did real well because she approached her soccer practice a lot how she approached a jiu-jitsu practice that she was doing since she was 5 years old. You know, when the coach spoke, she wasn't looking around. She had her hands behind her back and she's looking and she's listening. And when the coach asks, you try your best and you just go all out, you know, like, and I think the kids that have never experienced a martial arts practice, they may or they may not have that, but they can't consistently approach things in that manner. And I see how martial arts has affected my children, because they approach almost everything as they would approach a jiu-jitsu class, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And I've seen the same myself. I'm glad you brought that up. And I think ultimately it brings the practitioner a feeling of self-respect, which is what I feel is lacking, especially when you look at the way schools are structured today. And you see this, there's an epidemic of depression in kids and teens. And, you know, I live in a place in Canada where there's a very high suicide rate in young people. And that's a very shocking statistic. And it's kind of sad to talk about, but I think it's because a lot of these kids aren't given the tools that they can get from something like martial arts, where they're building that confidence. They have a positive environment. They have positive role models to look up to, and they're given some kind of direction and purpose in life. If you don't have a purpose in life, and you don't have a way of trying to refine yourself and make yourself better, you can start to fall into those depths of feeling depressed and feeling down and losing confidence. And then that's going to affect everywhere else in your life. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, and how do you, and it's very difficult to deal with it, because, you know, we're dealing with really like a society where, you know, there is really like, you know, I feel like there's a corruption of just the way things were, you know, and things being simple, you know. Like, I don't want to sound old and be like, oh, this new generation is this or this new generation is that. And it's not that, you know, it's the toughness of being a parent in the 21st century. You know, we have to work a lot. Maybe we don't spend so much time with the kids. And you know, I see a lot of parents, they, you know, they in their attempt to make up for the time that maybe they don't spend with the kids, or maybe in an attempt to make up for whatever insecurity they might have had when they were kids. You know, they give the kids like the newest phone and the most expensive shoes and all these like brand things. And next thing you know, the other kid wants that. You know, it's just like the typical keeping up with the Joneses that you see in most suburban America with cars and houses and refrigerators and pools. And the kids kind of play that game at school with clothing and cell phones and things like that. And honestly, man, like the day my kids start doing that, I'll first pull my kids out of school before anything, you know. Like I come from a different time and, you know, I grew up in Brazil, different culture. And, you know, I experienced it with my kids. You know, my daughter's like, hey, Dad, how come I can't do this? And I play the cards. Like, listen, like, we're not from around here.
Right, right.
We're not from Bordentown, New Jersey. And, man, I love my town. Like, I live in this little town in New Jersey where there's all these little restaurants. It's right next to a river. There's so many great things. But the kids these days, they have it really tough in school. And it's hard to guide them. And it's hard to make them feel appropriate. You know, they have this deep sense of just being inadequate that, you know, it's really like everywhere. And not only the kids, but the adults. And like you said, when you train martial arts and you know that you can rely on yourself, that you get this deeper sense of self-worth. Mm-hmm. And I guess some people get, you know, you see like CrossFit people get from that as well. And like the yoga people seem like they get this deep sense of, you know, of calm and peace with themselves. And depends, and it doesn't matter what the practice is, but I think that we need more in society. And I see jiu-jitsu give that more to kids and adults than your typical soccer practice or track practice or, you know, football practice for sure.
Oh, I agree completely. Well, okay. Well, let's talk about jiu-jitsu then, because I think that jiu-jitsu is a very unique martial art. My background is in Japanese jiu-jitsu. That's where I have most of my degrees. I grew up training and I was very fortunate to train with some very, very high level Japanese jiu-jitsu people in Ottawa. And also some people coming out of Montreal and, you know, and then we transitioned into working, with various Brazilian jiu-jitsu professors as well and expanding on that. And then I have a background also in kickboxing and karate. And I've also been studying sort of the philosophy and the more esoteric side of martial arts since I was a kid. I was always interested in it. And I think what drew me to it was that feeling of confidence and that feeling of respect and the ability to, you know, conquer mountains and things like that in your own life. And so jiu-jitsu, though, I've always seen as a very unique martial art, and it brings people together literally and physically in a way that in no other place would you be that close to a human being, you know, unless you are actually fighting them. It gets you hands-on. You were talking about how these kids are all into these cell phones and they're in the iPads and all of that and this sort of virtual reality. In the dojo, you're face-to-face with another human being. You're trying to test each other's mettle and bring out the best in each other in a friendly, safe environment. And it's hands-on. And I feel like jiu-jitsu is unique for that. Could you sort of talk about, I mean, you grew up in Brazil, so I'm sure jiu-jitsu was everywhere. But what was it that inspired you and that you found unique about the art of jiu-jitsu? And how did you get into it?
Man, I think, first of all, I think especially boys growing up, you know, like we love superheroes and anything that we do that, you know, it's kind of in any way, shape or form resembles that, you know. Like when I was a little kid, I used to tie like a towel around my back and run around and pretend I was flying like I was Superman, you know. And I started training when I was 15. So I was a little bit older, you know, than a lot of the guys at Gracie Baja. I started training at Gracie Baja. When I walked onto the mats, I was too big to be in the kids class, but I was too young, too small to be with the adults. So it was like maybe like five teenagers, like right in that 14, 15, 16 year old range that I used to train together all the time in the adult classes, you know? So I started to see, like I stopped looking up to like the sports figures, and I stopped, you know, of course I was too old to like superheroes, but like I started really looking up to the people at the academy, you know? It was already, especially at Gracie Baja, when I started, an extremely competition-oriented environment. You know, it was all about like the tournaments and performance, you know, and just being really good on the mats. And man, like I found an environment where, you know, Master Carlos Gracie Jr., more than almost any other person I have met, you know, like his ability to keep people together and to bring out the best in people, and also to instill healthy habits, you know, from what we ate to staying away from drugs to you know, anything. You know, I grew up in Rio de Janeiro, and you know, you could just walk into any gas station and buy beer, you know, have free access to alcohol at a very young age, and all the distractions that you could possibly imagine. You know, growing up in one of the coolest cities in the world, and jiu-jitsu gave me a sense of purpose. You know, like I was no longer just gonna, you know, look forward to Friday night to go get, you know, crazy drunk with my friends. I wanted to train, and I wanted to do good in tournaments, and I would start to watch the guys at the academy. You know, had all these guys who were so much better than me, and I see the guys that, you know, they would win in tournaments, and then they, you know, they would come back and they would be very disciplined. And they had these other guys that might have been better than those guys on a daily basis, but they always come on a Monday and talk about all the fun they had on the weekend, and you know, all the kind of trouble that they got with fights or with girls and this and that. And I just started to be able to guide myself more towards the guys that were able to win the competitions and the types of sacrifices that they did, and how they talked about, you know, what type of food they put in their body, you know, what type of things that they were thinking about, and the type of discipline that they had towards competitions. And these other guys were the guys, they were like, you know, the cool guys that, you know, maybe they went out all the time and they got all the chicks, but they get their butt kicked in the tournaments. So like, I don't want that, you know. I wanted to do good, and I wanted to, because I started late, you know, so I always felt like I was catching up, and I wanted to kind of, you know, make those guys proud, because I was one of the young kids, and they always helped me along, you know. So it created a very positive environment for me, and you know, very quickly I started getting older, and I brought my brother in, and my brother brought a ton of our friends from our neighborhood, and it was just like, you know, Gracie Baja became this assembly line of, you know, world champions. You know, like, it was such an incredible time to be there. And I think Master Carlos saved a lot of kids, man. You know, it was so much trouble that we could get into back in the day. But that discipline, that outlet that was given to us with, you know, competitive jiu-jitsu was unlike anything else I've ever seen, because the type of trouble that you could get there is life-threatening, you know, life-ending type of trouble.
Right. Yes. And I feel like, in a way, martial arts has definitely saved me from going down some of those paths when I was young. I have had a fortunate opportunity to be able to teach martial arts as well to many different age groups in different cities, and just to see the growth in people and see the, you sort of light a fire under people that wasn't there before. And then to also then see that they start to become more successful in other areas of their life as well is always such a huge reward to be a part of. And so I feel like martial arts is a really good way to have a healthy outlet for, especially for young boys, girls, of course, as well. But, you know, for young boys that would otherwise be out there seeking trouble, getting involved in gangs, you know, getting into the drugs or too much alcohol and partying and all that, they learn some sense of focus, sense of purpose, some sense of discipline. I think it's just incredible. Well, I'm sure you've heard John Danaher's breakdown of jiu-jitsu. And it's an amazing little clip on the Joe Rogan podcast where he sort of goes, this is what jiu-jitsu is. And he breaks it down. I'm not sure if you've heard of it, but I wanted to get your breakdown, Professor, of what, if somebody is not sure, they haven't really heard much about jiu-jitsu, you know, things like karate and taekwondo are typically more popular where I am. What would you say jiu-jitsu is?
So I think, you know, John, you know, is brilliant, and he has a very eloquent way of putting things that, you know, most of us normal human beings don't. You know, John is a very interesting guy, and I've heard his breakdown, and I think my breakdown is very similar. You know, to me, the way that I was initiated on the mats, from the way Master Carlos taught us at Gracie Baja, through the way later on I had a chance to spend so much more time and so much more access to Henzo, as far as being on the mats, than I ever did with Master Carlos. You know, it was big, you know, age gap. And also I lived at Henzo's house. As far as the technical aspect, it is, I think the number one thing is to not lose, right? Like, to, you know, jiu-jitsu, I think, is defensive first as a martial art. I think sometimes we forget that jiu-jitsu is a martial art that's inherent in self-defense, mm-hmm. not necessarily just a combat sport, you know. But but the technique plays very similar either way. So I think first what happens is we minimize the ability for our opponent to do damage, be it through punches or kicks. That's why the brilliant sort of like Gracie in action, you know, close the distance, take the fight down to the ground, you know, slap someone around a little bit, take their back and choke them. You know, like that was like the original blueprint that the Gracies got from Mitsumaeda. But I think it goes on a continuum from, it starts with you being able to minimize the ability for your opponent to do damage to you. You know, you make that initial contact, you know, if you're able to take the fight down to the ground, whether you're on the bottom or on top, you move from, you're minimizing your opponent's ability to do damage to you maximize your ability to do damage, you right. know, and that's why, you know, instead of exchanging punches on the feet, you take someone down, right? Then you move kind of like through the hierarchy of positions from guard to maybe an open guard to side mount to mount. And then once you start getting to mount, either you're punching it out or, you know, person's turning the back and you're getting the choke, you know? So to me, how I teach jiu-jitsu, even to my MMA guys, even to Eddie and even to Frankie and those guys, as soon as we hit the ground, we don't lose. Like like your first movement is to neutralize your opponent's attack. Then once you got that going, then you move from minimize damage from your opponent into a continue towards maximizing your ability to do damage to your opponent to that, where eventually you're able to put your opponent out, be it through strikes or techniques, you know? And I think it's very interesting because John's whole system of leg locks does just that at this moment, you know? Like, as soon as those guys enter ashigarami of any of the leg entanglements, of any of those positions where, you know, back in the day, it was kind of like 50-50, but any of these positions where you have your legs entangled on your partner and you're really like looking at your partner right in the eyes and you're just like leg weaving, you see Gary and Gordon and some of John's guys enter that, and immediately their ability to do damage is maximum. Mm-hmm. And because, you know, traditionally people neglected leg locks, and, you know, especially I think a lot of the Brazilians still frown upon leg locks, immediately their ability to do damage is minimized. You know, I'll use Gordon's last ADCCs, his fight with Cyborg. Man, Cyborg is a monster, bro. Like, he's won ADCC, you know, he's beaten Buchecha, you know, all the things that he has done. As soon as Gordon pulls guard and he entangles legs, immediately you see in Cyborg's face that his ability to do anything was immediately minimized just for lack of knowledge in that position, lack of muscle memory, lack of, you know, understanding where to weave, where to go. Whereas Gordon's ability to finish the fight was extremely maximized because he was not just one or two, three moves ahead. Like, he was already done before Cyborg even had the ability to stop. Like, that tap, it was literally like it wasn't a verbal tap. It was a visual tap. Like, Cyborg just looked at Gordon and he's like, man, I can't get out of here. And Gordon didn't even crank it super hard, you know? And that's not a knockdown to Cyborg in any ways. You know, like, we've seen Gordon do that to a lot of people, and we've seen Gary do that to a lot of people. It's really a testament to Gordon and Gary and some of the John's guys for kind of like flipping the whole positional hierarchy upside down, but also a true testament to John for keeping in mind a testament to John for always being like so brilliant and always looking for better ways. And then also Hanzo, you know, for Hanzo, Hanzo's never been the type of guy to impose doctrines on people. Like, whatever works, works. And that's right. What we do. You know, we make jiu-jitsu work. Doesn't matter what position. A white belt could come and show Hanzo a technique, you know. So Hanzo never imposed, hey, John, you cannot teach leg locks in my school. You know, he's always given freedom, not only to John, but to everybody else. So yeah, if I had to explain jiu-jitsu is, you know, once we're in grappling range, we look to minimize damage from our opponent and maximize our ability to either do damage as far as strikes or submissions, and we try to win the fight as quickly as possible. like Hansel says, hit without getting hit, you know, do damage without taking none. And that's it. To me, that's what jiu-jitsu is.
Well, that was very eloquent. Very, very well said. I couldn't agree more. And I appreciate you explaining that, because I think a lot of people misunderstand jiu-jitsu. When they see two people wrestling on the ground, they maybe think they're just fighting over the remote control for the TV or something. They don't understand what's actually going on. And that's why I like that you have commentators in even MMA with guys like Joe Rogan, who is very well versed on the ground as well and understands what jiu-jitsu is and can call out positions and educate the audience. When you go in Japan, I mean, you've fought in Japan. This seems to be that the audience, the crowd there, at least back in the Pride days and everything, was a lot more educated on fighting than the American audience. And it's taken some time for them to sort of get updated as to, well, this is what real fighting actually is. It's not just jump spinning hook kicks like from Van Damme or whatever. It's real combat where people are entangling themselves. Most fights go to the ground. Going to the ground takes away all that kinetic explosive energy and all of these things. And what you've just described as what jiu-jitsu is it now gives the opportunity for someone who is at a disadvantage. They're smaller. They're not as athletic to be able to still have get into dominant positions and still win and overpower a more powerful opponent, which if you think about it, that's what self-defense is. Most of the time, if you're in a situation where someone wants to kick your ass, they're not going to be smaller than you. They're going to be bigger, stronger, more intimidating. That's why they're coming after you, because they think you're an easy target. So something like jiu-jitsu just sort of neutralizes that playing field. Do you agree?
Yeah, 100%. You know, and I think Rogan has done an incredible job of really educating the American public. I think what you described of the public knowing exactly what was going to happen ahead of time, especially in the ground, because like, standing is so hard. Standing is like, by the time the strike lands, like it's too late. You just cheer it. But in the ground, like there's definitely a buildup most of the times, unless it's like a flying arm lock or like a very explosive move. That's a transition from feet to floor. Then, you know, like a guillotine or something like that. But, you know, Joe has done an incredible job of educating the public, I feel. And, man, and you go to a UFC fight and you know, people cheer, you know, the guard pass and the mount. They know it's about to be over, you know. And the back take into the rear naked choke. I think even the most casual fan that watches the UFC more than, you know, just the Conor McGregor fight or you know what I mean, the Ronda Rousey fight, I think they recognize that. And I think even Ronda, you know, like she finished so many fights with the arm lock. And
right,
I
guess
people learn that, you know, people learn, man, people are not dumb. You know, they watch it and they see it and they're like, wow, that's really cool. And there's the video game and you're starting to see some of those moves, even in pro wrestling. Sometimes I see the things on TV, on like the commercials, and they're doing like arm locks, the movies, you see a lot of, you know, joint locks and arm locks and stuff. So yeah, for sure.
That's awesome. Yeah, I agree. It's been a crazy evolution, and jiu-jitsu is constantly evolving, and martial arts in general. And, you know, I look at the martial arts as just, there's various styles of movement. It's really just different types of movement, and you're trying to master movement and, you know, awaken that sort of somatic intelligence and get that mind body connection going. And there's a variety of styles, but, it's when you see different matchups in fighting, you'll see one guy, it used to be the traditional striker versus grappler. And we still get to see that today because there are guys who are more proficient on the ground than they are striking, vice versa. When you were fighting professionally in mixed martial arts, would you have said that your main strategy then was to impose jiu-jitsu, or did you want to go in there and say, hey, I want to be able to do the knockouts and do the striking? I mean, because you do have knockouts as well and great striking game. Or were you in there saying, I want to impose jiu-jitsu? Like, what was your sort of mindset as a fighter?
Man, I liked hitting my opponents. the fight standing, you do end up getting hit a lot. You know, like I Frankie is an example. Man, he has amazing boxing, and I have like, we have an incredible boxing coach here. And man, he's always the one calling for takedowns. Mark Henry, he's like amazing. Because, man, if you just stay standing and as soon as you hit someone with their right hand's coming right back at you, you know, like, right. So, and on the ground, you hit people, you know. I used to like ground and pound, you know, especially with the elbows. You know, you could elbow, you could hit someone and I feel it makes the grappling even easier. You know, if you're able to hit someone, it's easier to pass their guard. It's easier to mount. But, you know, it's the UFC, man. Guys are tough to take down. They're tough to keep down. So you have to be well-rounded enough to use jiu-jitsu, you know? Like, I think the jiu-jitsu that we know doesn't work unless people engage you, you know, like in a fight.
Right.
Like a lot of the things that you see in a jiu-jitsu competition, like the EBIs and stuff like that, like, you know, all these awesome leg locks and stuff like that, stuff would never work like in MMA in a consistent basis, because you're allowed to run away. You're allowed to disengage. Just right. The same way you don't see a NCAA wrestler always come in and take everybody down clean in mixed martial arts, because, you know, NCAA cannot take, if you take three steps back, you get a caution. So you have to always kind of push forward, which allows for those takedowns to come more often. And now you got the cage, you got guys running, and you guys got cage walking. So the wrestling becomes very, very different, you know. But then you will have the Cormiers and the Khabibs that are able to impose that game on, you know, virtually anyone they fight. Just like you have Maya, who's able to impose his jiu-jitsu on virtually everyone he fights. But even Maya, he's a classical example. All the times that Damian lost is because he couldn't take somebody down. He couldn't hold them down enough to impose his game. He's had definitely some wins from the bottom. Like, you know, he choked out Chael, because Chael kind of followed him to the ground. But I think all of Maya's losses have been because in the MMA rules, you're allowed to not engage. You don't have to try to pass the guard. You don't have to engage someone on the ground. Whereas the jiu-jitsu that most guys play in competitions, you know, you have to engage. So those are quite a lot easier. You know, you're able to play a very reactive style of jiu-jitsu, whereas if you go to the highest level guys, they're just reacting to what you're doing because you're forced to do something, you know. But to be able to play a proactive game where you're taking people down and keeping them down and then taking their back and choking them, you know, unless you got the takedowns, you're just not going to work. That's just the reality, you know. So I think that probably almost everyone that trains jiu-jitsu that wants to be a pro fighter, you got to wrestle. If you don't wrestle, you know, you better be good at striking. And man, just watching Gary's debut was awesome. You know, Gary had a great fight. He's, you know, he's been working on his striking, and you know, he tried to ground and pound his opponent. He had beautiful ground and pound. He just did it all. You know, and I think that's the future. You know, it's and that's the future to me in grappling too. That's what I try to pass on to my students. You have to be well-rounded. You know, you have to have enough takedowns to take the guys down that don't have good enough takedowns. Good leg locks to leg lock the guys that don't have leg locks, and good passing. So you have to be able to do it all, you know, and of course you have to have your favorites.
Yes. And then it's also an art form. So like you said, like you were saying that, you know, Master Carlos and Henzo, they didn't have this sort of edict in the school where you had to follow this cookie cutter pattern only, and you couldn't have any other way of looking at it. I mean, martial arts, I come from sort of a Bruce Lee concept of, you know, it's an expression of the human body, and you're shown the step-by-steps. You're given sort of the paint by numbers in the beginning to learn all the proper techniques and the most efficient way of moving your body. But then eventually you get to a point where it's about expressing your style and creating a style, right? I wanted to ask you about the self-defense. You brought it up earlier. Do you feel right now in jiu-jitsu that it's going in a direction, or has been going in a direction for a while, focusing very, very heavily only on the competitive side, and maybe been lacking a lot in bringing new people in and, you know, really catering to the community and showing people how to defend themselves? Do you feel like that's been a bit of an issue? I know Master Hickson Gracie has been commenting on this. Of course, me coming from a Japanese jiu-jitsu style, which is primarily, you know, it's the combat art of the samurai warrior, right? So there, it is all about self-defense and all of that. What do you feel about that right now in the jiu-jitsu world?
Man, I feel like the rules of sport jiu-jitsu have like a little bit of evolving to do, you know, as far as making it seem a little bit more like a fight, you know, like a little bit more like what would happen in a fight, you know, like, I don't like guys pulling guard. Like, I don't have a problem with guys pulling guard, but I like the rules in ADCC where you take a minus point because you're basically essentially running from the fight on the feet. So I feel like if you're going to pull guard, like, you have to do something to win the fight, you know, because if you just basically ran away from the takedowns. But man, like, you know what I mean? Like, people say, I'll be the first to say that, you know, there's a lot of guys that their games that they play in competition, you know, if they were in a fight, it's like, man, like this guy couldn't fight his way out of a wet paper bag.
Right.
But to me, there's no doubt in my mind that like the typical blue belt that competes in a that's successful in competition could pretty much handle any human being on the street, provided they're more or less same size. You know what I mean? Provided it's not, you know, 150-pound blue belt against the 300-pound freaking NFL guy, then of course it's a mismatch. Right. But I definitely, even in a very specific gi, sort of like IBJJF rules, I think the typical, you know, blue belt in jiu-jitsu will smash just like someone on the street, like without much of a thought. That's just my opinion, you know. But I would like to see more well-rounded game, you know, like for just overall. But man, like it's like in surfing, you know, like I surf my whole life.
Oh, cool.
And if you watch surfing now, it's all like rotations in the air, like snowboarding. Like if you go to the beach and you watch guys surfing, like 90% of people are not doing that. You know, they're just kind of riding the wave and then just kind of riding the wave all the way in and having a good time. And then in surfing, you have the guys, they're like the performance guys. You have the guys that have the long boards. You have the guys that, you know, the like stand up paddle boards. So I think jiu-jitsu is a little bit like that now. There's a lot of little niches, you know. There's the IBJJF guys that they don't really want to do, you know, sub-only tournaments, you know. Then you have these guys that only want to do sub-only, that they don't really want to go and, you know, points. And it just sucks that sometimes one has to badmouth the other instead of appreciating the other, you know. Like, I appreciate watching, you know, the world championship finals. You know, the guys and the girls are so talented. And I'll go watch EBI and see Gary and Gordon just like dismantling people. You know, Gary freaking, you know, is 170 pounds and he won the heavyweight, you know, against, you know, former BJJ world champions. So it's pretty amazing. As I enjoy watching ADCCs, you know, like, and as I enjoy watching like all these other, you know, type of tournaments, you know, it's all brought a level of development, technical development to the sport, unlike anything we've seen in the 10 years before. You know, like I think the past 5 years has been so much development technique wise and all these pro tournaments where guys are getting paid that we've never seen that in the history of jiu-jitsu at this rate, this fast. So to me, it's all really cool. I appreciate it all. And I try to learn a little bit of it all, you know, like I try to practice a little bit of it all. I'm an instructor, so I feel like I have to be a little bit of a source for my guys. But yeah, you know, like, man, like, can you actually, you know, block a punch and take somebody down when they're trying to hit you? Oh, no. Then, man, like, are you really like a martial artist? You know,
right.
like what are you? You know, like, I think that, you know, like, it's like, man, all right, what are you going to do if there's a fight? I think that we can never forget that. For the guys that are pros, it doesn't matter what they do. You could put somebody in there. If Gordon wants to go out in, you know, in Times Square and challenge and put $1,000 for everybody that fights him, he's going to pull Gordon and leg lock 1,000 people in a row.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter. Like, those guys could do whatever they want. Just the same way Bushesha, you know, is going to freaking do cartwheels and smash the crap out of whoever they put in front of him.
Right.
That's not even a discussion. It's just like, how about me? You know, like, I'm like a 40-year-old guy. I've been athletic most of my life. Like, how do I deal with that? You know, I know Gordon, you could do it. I know Bushesha, you could do it. I know Gary, you could do it. I know, you know, Felipe Pena, his kid's amazing. He could do whatever he wants. He could do, you know, X-Guard and you know, and Spider Guard in a fight, probably with gi and no gi.
Right.
But I can't. And, you know, 99.9% of my students can't. So what do I teach them? You know, I think that ends up being like an interesting discussion that sometimes takes too long and it's more biased on, you know, whatever people are dedicating most of their time to.
Yeah, and I agree. And I like that you said, like, you're appreciating all the different flavors of jiu-jitsu and martial arts in general, because, I mean, it's multifaceted. There's, you know, there's the technical self-defense aspect, which, I mean, is actually very simple. It's not a huge curricula, if you could say. It's just, it's very much about practicing it and ingraining it and getting the muscle memory. And then, well, what are you going to do? You're just going to train self-defense all the time? Or do you want to evolve your game by testing your skill against other skilled jiu-jitsu practitioners? that's where I think the competitive angle comes in. So it's kind of like, this is how you address somebody on the street when they're just coming up and trying to grab you or hit you or kick you. And then, you know, this is how you deal with an actual trained martial artist. It's a different kind of game, right? Well, we've got about 10 minutes left, Professor, and I'd love to just pick your brain, leaving the show here, about sort of the philosophy of martial arts, the whole mindset of, regardless of what martial art you train, what it should do for you as a person in your personal development journey in this life. What do you feel about sort of the philosophy of martial arts and jiu-jitsu as it relates to everyday life or business or relationships, etc.?
I think there's no other practice that you would get the physical benefits that you get in martial arts practice, you know, to be the strongest you could possibly be and the lightest you could possibly be in that package. You know what I mean? Like the typical martial artist, instead of being bulky and not being able to run 100 yards without, you know, dropping to a knee and having to catch his breath, you know, like I think that, you know, you will have endurance, you will have flexibility, you will have muscle tone, and you have, you know, like a real healthy body that's able to do other things well. You know, if it's a great compliment for people that do other sports, it's also a great compliment for people that don't do sports at all, because, you know, it almost serves as physical therapy if you're not too destructive with your body in the training, you know. But as far as the mental aspect, you know, like I think jiu-jitsu is very challenging. I do believe that life in the 21st century is very, very challenging, you know, from this feeling of inadequacy that we have from, you know, all the things that are around us, you know, should I have more money? Should I live in a bigger house? You know, should I be doing better? Should I have more money in my retirement account? And like all these pressures that we have in the 20s, you know, should my kids be doing this? What school are my kids going to go to? All these pressures that we have, you know, in modern life, and all the amount of hours that we actually work in the typical, you know, I'll say North American society, because I believe Canada is not too distant from, you know, what we do here in the US. But yeah, the amount of hours that we work for, the amount of hours that we have off, and the lifestyles are just very demanding. So in jiu-jitsu, you will be challenged and you learn to deal, especially for me, you know, it's the stress. You know, I find that when I'm more focused on my training, I could take stress better. Like I'm a little bit more forgiving, not only with myself, but with my kids and you know, and significant other and you know, just really being able to be a better person, you know. But I think most of it all, life now is very plastic and in some ways sterile. You know, like a kid could just walk up to school and bully someone and say whatever they want, and really pretty much nothing is going to happen, you know. And I tell my kids all the time, you know, like if somebody's doing something to you, like you get a freaking, like, oh, let's go buy some tuna cans and you stick those tuna cans in your soccer socks and you smack them right across the head. I don't care what happens. If they're not going to do something, you're going to do something. You're like, you're never going to be in the hands of someone standing up for you. If you don't stand up for yourself, like, that's the first step to not being able to do anything in this world, is not having the ability to stand up for yourself. But you know, there are other less violent ways than I just described here to deal with that. But you have to have that, you know, like you have to have the confidence that, you know, if someone's going to do something to you, that you're going to stand up for yourself, that you're going to say no. You know, and man, we mentioned before how great jiu-jitsu is for boys, but man, how about for the little girls? I have so many little girls that train in my school.
Absolutely.
And, you know, they start from when they're four. Sometimes we keep it until they're like 13, 14, and you know, and they go through like all the adolescents and they feel like a little bit uncomfortable with, you know, having boys there. But man, like what jiu-jitsu teaches just kids in general, like what is appropriate touching too, you know? It's like, absolutely, someone grabs you. Are you gonna get intimidated by, you know, when they grab you rough, where you just kind of shove them off? So there's like so many little things that you learn from the martial arts practice. But to me, you know, in modern life, I think number one is just this sense of peace with yourself, this sense of self-worth that, you know, very few things could give us these days, you know. And also on the physical side, just being, you know, being in good shape and having a healthy body. You know, like if you go do bodybuilding, you're really like, are you really building or you're destroying your body with that thing? You know, or even CrossFit. You see these guys all jacked, but you always hear these horror stories of people messing up their backs and things like that, you know. And I haven't done enough to know if that's, you know, individual cases or if it is happening a lot. I just know that with jiu-jitsu, you know, typically muscle tone, flexibility, endurance, all those things come in a mild dose, and you know, kind of just what the doctor prescribed, I think. You know, like you have a healthy body when you're practicing martial arts.
Oh yeah, couldn't agree more. Well, I just wanted to ask you, are you thinking of setting up any kind of online curriculum or video series or anything? I know Marcelo Garcia has his online academy and other jiu-jitsu guys are doing it. I myself am developing something for people, for anybody to be able to learn martial arts from home. I know you're on so many, I'm looking at your bio, you're on so many different boards and you were a consultant for the fundamentals curriculum and so many other things. Is there any vision of the future of having sort of an online academy?
Man, there is. I think that what we have here in Jersey is pretty special. You know, like people say that I have a good school, but what I really have is just really good students. I've been able to set up, well, not really set up, it wasn't really set up for myself. I've been able to attract people that have set up an awesome environment, and you know, our methodology, you know, most of what I learned has come from Gracie Baja and then Henzo, a lot of my interactions with John Danaher. I definitely am setting something up online. I am moving my school, my main location actually in the middle of the summer. So as soon as I'm done with that, I'm working on releasing something in the fall. I never wanted to have a library of things online where people could just kind of come and see techniques being taught. My vision is for more of an online library of like mini courses where people could, you know, have like individual areas of their game. Maybe even like weight cutting for, you know, IBJJ for competitions, you know, like little tricks that I've picked up along the years, just being able to really put it down and just kind of leave it out there for the people that come after me. You know, I'm actually watching a documentary with Oliver Stone on Netflix about the history of the United States. And in the beginning, he says that it feels like the history that's taught in schools is not the real history. And he wanted to leave something for his children and grandchildren to see. And it's just very different than most people think, you right. know, and it's very interesting. And that little quote that Oliver Stone had in the beginning, like really, really stuck with me. And it's something I've been thinking about, you know, like just leaving something out there to document like my interpretation of things. And of course, that's going to get built on by the people that come after me. That's really what's most important. Just putting it to good use. In my head is not much of a good use anymore, you know?
Oh yeah, exactly. And you, I guess the more you train, the more things you end up forgetting. So it's nice if you can document it and have it there and have it available and spread it out to more people. Well, Professor, you know, you're a true inspiration. I really encourage you to keep going with what you're doing. It's been amazing to have you on this show. Possibly in the future, maybe we could hook up something with Henzo if he's ever available. It'd be great to have him on. We'll see. But I just want to thank you for your time and maybe let people know where they can find you on Twitter or your website or social media so they can hook up with you there.
I'm mostly on Facebook and Instagram. You should type in Ricardo Almeida or Ricardo Almeida BJJ is my Instagram handle. That's usually where I go. Yeah, you know, most of my social media is about the people around me, not so much about me. You know, like I'm not that interesting. But the things that I see and the experiences that I share with the people who are in my life are pretty special to me. So I try to post mostly about that. So yeah, you find me, Ricardo Almeida.
Very good. Well, we'll put some links below. And I think you're very interesting and you're a fantastic guest. I'm so glad we were able to have you. And thanks for sharing your knowledge and experience on jiu-jitsu and martial arts. We hope to connect with you again. We'll stay in touch. One of these days, I got to get down to New Jersey and come in and come and get my ass kicked at your club. I'd love to do that. That'd be awesome. Anytime, so maybe one of these days I'll come in. That'd be great. Awesome. Cool. Well, thank you.
David, thank you so much for having me. All right.
My pleasure. My pleasure. And thanks all for who have tuned in. Stick around. We're going to have another maybe 5-10 minute break. And then Ryan and I are going to come back on for another live with you guys. So thank you, Professor. And thanks for all for viewing. We'll catch you again here very soon.
Thanks for listening, guys. Absolutely. Keep training hard.
Will do. Us. Cheers, guys.
Oof.